I'm Jorge Salazar with the Texas Advanced Computing Center. Our podcast today is a bit of a science mystery. It begins with our cells, which are filled with bones, in a sense. Thin, flexible protein strands called actin filaments help support and move around the bulk of the cells of eukaryotes, which include all plants and animals. Always on the go, actin filaments constantly grow, shrink, and bind with other things, and they branch off when cells move. The incredible mystery that's been known experimentally for decades is that one filament end is very different from the other end. This mysterious polarization is needed for the actin filament to function like it needs to. Supercomputer simulations have helped solve the mystery of how actin filaments polymerize. The simulations were awarded by XSEED, the Extreme Science and Engineering Discovery Environment funded by the National Science Foundation. The Stampede 2 supercomputer at the Texas Advanced Computing Center supported this fundamental research, which could be applied to treatments to stop cancer spread, develop self-healing materials, and more. On the podcast today are study co-authors Vilmos Szolné and Gregory Voth. They're both at the University of Chicago, where Szolné is a graduate student and Voth a distinguished professor. Welcome to the podcast. What are the main findings of your study on actin filaments, which give support inside of cells like girders of a building, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, December of 2020?
The major findings of our paper explain a property of actin filaments that has been known for about 50 years or so, which is that one end of the actin filament elongates much, much faster than the other at a physiological concentration. And what our study sets out to do and shows in the paper is that there is a structural basis for these different polymerization kinetics.
And the actin filament in your cell, you're absolutely right. It's sometimes people call it the bones of the cell, right? Of the mammalian, the eukaryotic cell, but it's dynamic. It's a form of active matter that it's constantly growing and shrinking and things binding to it and branching. And, you know, when cells move, it hydrolyzes ATP in this process. So it's not a molecular motor, but it's absolutely does that. And this incredible mystery that's been known experimentally for a very long time is that one end is very different from the other. It's so-called polarized, and why it polymerizes differently. If it did not do that, it couldn't function at all like it needs to. And so this is a fundamental thing. And the other thing, and I don't mean to interrupt Vil, because Vil really did do this work and he knows it intimately, is this paper for, you know, our computing friends is really a prime example of where computer simulation alone, there's not experiments in this paper, is answering a very, very critical question, right? In this case, it's molecular dynamics simulations, very large scale molecular dynamics simulations. There's been a Nobel Prize given for this in 2013, this kind of work. But, you know, it's still a lot of people, you know, experimentalists still have this kind of wary eye about computer simulation is not real. You know, it's an animation. And this is something really proving that wrong. And our collaborator on it, Thomas Pollard, who's one of the co-authors, one of the great scientists in this field. I mean, you know, it doesn't get any more famous than that guy.
Yeah, so we find that one end has a very loose connection, and that's the fast end. And we think that the loose connection between actin monomers within the actin polymer allows incoming monomers to have access to a binding site such that it can make this connection and have the polymerization reaction continue. Whereas at the pointed end, which is the slow end, there is very tight connections between subunits, and that blocks an incoming monomer's ability to polymerize onto that end.
What's meaningful about the fact that one end of the filament grows and shortens faster than the other?
Like Greg had mentioned earlier, the actin filaments are what give the cell its shape. And so over time, the cell's shape is going to be changing. This is a dynamic process. And so when a cell wants to move forward, for instance, it will polymerize actin in a particular direction. Those actin filaments then push on the cell membrane, which allow the cell to move in a particular direction. And so by having this polarized elongation such that one end elongates much faster than the other, you have a direction to this polymerization reaction. And therefore, the cell can direct that polymerization in the direction that it wants to move. and therefore move the cell forward. So if you can imagine a cell membrane and then you have a actin filament pointing towards it, would you rather have the end that polymerizes very quickly pushing up against that membrane if you want to drive it forward, or the end that polymerizes very slowly? And so as a cell, you would want to have the end that polymerizes very quickly pushing up against that membrane to drive the cell in that direction. And so if you have a ton of actin filaments all aligned in the same direction, all of their fast polymerizing ends will be pushing in the exact same direction. And that's how you end up with a directed motion at the cellular level.
For the benefit of people listening, what's important about knowing how cells move? What's the bigger picture?
What's in the news right now is coronavirus, and there is something called the innate immune system, which involves these white blood cells called neutrophils, which go around and you can see them gobbling up bacteria or other pathogens within your bloodstream. And what's critical to their ability to, you know, sniff out and sneak and seek out pathogens is their ability to move through a complex environment and find the pathogens wherever they are. And so in the immune response, it's very important. But at the other end, this can go wrong. And in a cancerous cell, when you can have something called metastatic cancer, where your cancer cell, which is localized in a tumor, one of the cells or a couple of the cells will start to migrate outside of the tumor and enter your bloodstream and then go all over your body that way. And so that process from going from a localized tumor environment into the bloodstream is a very interesting process from the standpoint of keeping cancer from spreading to other parts of the body. So if you could disrupt that in some way or make it so that it's not as reliable for your cancerous cells, then you could make a cancer treatment based off of that information.
Could you speak to some of the computational challenges you faced in your simulations, the relaxation of a filament in solution to its equilibrium structure?
These are molecular dynamics simulations, which are just integrating Newton's equations of motion for a particular model of how these proteins interact with each other, which is known as the force field. But it's a big simulation. It's on the order of a million atoms when you bring in the solvent, the water. And, you know, typically speaking, you have a time step. So you numerically integrate Newton's equations, right, with an algorithm. And the time step is on the order of a femtosecond. But you're trying to access time scales orders of magnitude longer than that. And that involves looking at, you know, larger motions of the proteins. And in this case, differentiating between the two ends of this filament, which is critical. So in any molecular dynamics simulation, there's always the issue of, is it long enough? Is it big enough? If it's not long enough in time, then you have to use enhanced methods to sample the motions more. I don't know if Vil did so much of that. He didn't need to in this one. And also, to be fair, a combination of things like the computational resources, for example, at TAC, or, you know, we've seen things pushing the scale of computing, plus algorithms that have been developed, plus, you know, scalability, parallel, it has really pushed this technology. You know, it used to be, I think we did in my research group back in 2004, I think it was the first simulation of a piece of an actin filament. And it was a total hero simulation. It was about 700,000 atoms. And I think we did it for tens of nanoseconds. And, you know, now in my group, I hate to use the word routine because it's not routine, but, you know, we can do that, like lots of them. And for a long time, and that's what Vil was able to do really reproducibly.
The computational challenges were more so on the side that Greg is talking about, which is where we're trying to access these really long timescales for really large systems, which means you have to do a ton of computation in order to have enough time steps that reach those long timescales. And so the computational challenge is really the scalability. And on top of that, if you have a single simulation, that gives you a hypothesis a lot of times. And then to see that hypothesis is borne out, you would like to do replicates where you do the exact same simulation multiple times. And so that again is a question of scale. How much computational resource are you able to divert towards this particular question? And so the high performance computing clusters at Stampede 2 are really what allowed this work to take place because they were able to reach the time scales and length scales that we were interested in. This was one of my first projects using a high performance computing cluster. And we have a local cluster here at Chicago. And so it was actually very straightforward to test the stuff on our local cluster here and then just easily drop a couple files onto the machines at Stampede2 and start running again within a day. So it was a very short lag time between going from our computing cluster to this high performance computing cluster at Stampede. So the simulations that we were running were roughly a million atoms, and those were then propagated for the timescale of a microsecond, and then we did 9 such replicates of those simulations. There are 3 nucleotide states that we were interested in, the ATP, the ADP plus a gamma phosphate, and then once phosphate's released, it's an ADP nucleotide state. So we did 3 replicates in each of those nucleotide states for 9 simulations total. It ended up being about 6.5 microseconds of simulation in total.
What did the experiment consist of, and what data did you use in your computer models?
So our experimental collaborators recently in the past couple of years were able to reconstruct what an actin filament looks like experimentally using cryo-electron microscopy. And so what they were able to do is recover a structure of an actin subunit within the interior of a filament. And so that tells you what the actin monomer looks like within a filament, but it doesn't tell you what it looks like at the ends of the filament. And so what we did is we took that structure, we patterned it out as though it was in a filament with 2 ends exposed. So this is 13 monomers initially in the exact same conformation, which then, as we use our molecular dynamics algorithms, relax to the structures given their environment. So the ones that are in the middle stay roughly the same, but the ones at the ends relax to distinct conformations. So that's the computational experiment.
Is there a simple way to describe the differences in conformations of the 2 ends of the actin filament?
An actin monomer floating around in solution has a particular conformation that's a little bit wider than when an actin monomer is within the context of a longer polymer. And so this wide shape has always been thought to transition into the flattened shape once it polymerizes almost discretely. That has been the working model. But what we saw is that when we started the filament with all of the monomers in that flattened state, the ones at the end then relaxed back to what looked like a monomeric state that was characterized by a wider shape. And so at both of the ends, that led to very different, that same mechanism of widening of the actin molecule led to very different contacts between subunits. So at the barbed end, the fast end, there was a separation between the 2 molecules at that end, whereas at the pointed end, there was a very tight connection between them.
How does this research relate to non-scientists?
I think that the biologically relevant downstream implications are very compelling in the immune system and also in cancer research. But also one angle that Greg and I find particularly interesting is from a material science standpoint. So the actin molecule is extremely conserved throughout all of eukaryotes. And so what that means is that yeast cell and a plant cell and I are very different biologically, but we all use the same, roughly the same actin molecules. They differ by only, let's say, 1% in terms of their amino acid sequence. And so that gives a hint to us that there's something special about the material properties of the actin molecules that can't be reproduced using different set of amino acids. And so from a biomimetic standpoint, we can try to understand the design principles that have emerged through evolution over millions and billions of years that arrive at these actin molecules and try to then translate that into synthetic or hybrid materials. So this could be a material that self-repairs just like a cell does, or a material that, if you can imagine, like a very simple example would be like, you know, if I get a cut, my body will heal itself. And a lot of that has to do with this underlying actin cytoskeleton that responds to the force applied when I am wounded. However, a bucket, if I get a hole in a bucket, it does not heal itself. I have to go and heal it myself with a piece of duct tape or something like that. So you could imagine in the future, another type of material that when my bucket gets a hole in it, that bucket will sense that a wound has occurred and then will heal itself just like a human or a eukaryotic cell would do.
What's the most important thing you want people to know about this research on actin filaments?
So for other researchers who are studying actin, I want them to know that the barbed end is very loosely associated between subunits and therefore very floppy. I think that that has implications that I don't yet even appreciate for actin binding proteins that bind preferentially to that end. But for researchers or anyone in general, I think that one thing that I found very rewarding about this project is that this was a question that had been the question of why an actin filament elongates faster at one end versus the other had been around for decades. And it's something that I had been very interested in once I first learned of that property. And so having your mind open to work on a project that others had not thought about for a long time, and you can hope to get some answers or understanding from that.
I think there's really the fundamental question of just understanding how cells work. There's so many different aspects, and this is one of the most ubiquitous proteins in all of mammalian cells. But then there's all the disease and material science possibilities. People really are very keen on biomimetic materials, right? Things that behave like these polymers. And this is identifying a critical thing, which is the polarization of these things.
You've been listening to Vilmos Cholnay and Gregory Voth of the University of Chicago. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.